You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and this is Features Editor John Gentile, and I'm here with Try Co-Senior Editor Sammy B. Sammy B, what's going on?
I'm so tired. I'm always tired when I do these things. Why do I keep on doing these things, Sean?
Because you love punk rock, Sam. That's why.
I really do. Like, investing all this time into being a punk, damn.
Don't know
You
if
get to hang
investing
out
is the
with
right.
us.
I don't know if investing is the right word, where there is not only not a financial benefit, but a negative financial benefit.
I literally said this to like band people recently because Chris just played a show with Banquet and Earth and this band called Pressure Wheel. And I was like, punk don't pay. I was like, it really doesn't.
It really doesn't. I mean, even mid-level bands make so little money, compared to either their pop contemporaries or hip hop contemporaries. I mean, it is crazy how little rock pays in 2026. Once you get over that hump, you know, that aim on the sniffers size hump, once you're at like at that level, you're making good money. But before that, you're not making like jack shit.
No, we just need to get TikTok viral.
Well,
Yes.
I think maybe, well, you and M have that ability, but I do not have the I have to work so hard to get people to do things that I'm interested in. I don't have that online presence, that charisma. M might, M, try co try head editor. Do you have the charisma to
Hello.
become a TikTok star?
Ooh, I think I do, but I am really bad with social media where I will either use it for like 20 hours at a time or I will not use it at all. So I don't think it would go well. I do
Well,
have a TikTok account. I haven't posted anything on it.
you should do it, M, and become famous, and then give us money.
Yes.
Well, we'll do a sponsorship of some sort, right? Like, maybe we could get like sponsored by like, I don't know, insoles for shoes because we're standing around for too long to watch bands.
Ooh,
Yeah,
I like that.
actually, speaking of sponsorship, I'm not really interested in starting a war or whatever, but I'll be a little vague, and longtime listeners will figure this out. We had on a guy that organized a festival, which I thought was kind of distasteful, and we had him on because I thought it was distasteful to see if he could offer any kind of reason as to why he was doing it, and he couldn't, you know. And then after it happened, he sent me an email. He's like, "Everything went great, John." I didn't even respond. He
Yes.
re he recently sent me another email that like he found a
Oh,
leftover crack ticket stub, and he's like, "John, look what I found." And I'm like, "Why is this guy like wanting to be my friend? Like it's genuinely odd."
no. Well, John, you have so much charisma, and maybe he just needs a
Maybe.
friend, and you are his friend in his brain. I don't know.
But I mean, you guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes,
Yes.
yes,
Yes.
yes.
Yes. So, I mean,
It
it's weird.
is odd. But John, everyone wants to be your friend
No,
when
that's not
you're
true.
No, I know that. But I'm just saying when you have very little friends because you've literally scorned so many people, you need to make friends. Maybe like Conan O'Brien has an entire podcast on making friends. He talks to his friends. Maybe this is what happens, John. You bring people onto the podcast and you make them think you're his their friends. I don't know. Are
Man.
we even friends? What's up with
Well,
that?
no, well, say we're friends. I'm insulted that you think we would not be friends.
No, I know we are friends. I know that. That was a given.
Not
I'm
my
just
friend anymore,
saying.
Sam. You're not my friend anymore.
Oh my God, this is like some
No.
kindergarten like nonsense at the playground. I'm gonna throw sand at you next time I see you.
I am literally finding out right now that the Rolling Stones secretly released a 12-inch single under the name The Cockroaches, and
Yeah.
it is
Ooh.
selling for $1,500 online. I'm not getting
Yeah,
them. That sucks.
wasn't there like only 1,000 made or something like that?
How'd you know about it before I did?
John, I do have circles of people that talks to me about random records for no apparent reason. So I'm sorry I did not bring this up in our conversations recently.
Man, that sucks. Oh well, what are you gonna do? Okay, let's talk about punk rock. People don't want to hear about me having no friends and the Rolling Stones obscure releases. Listen, what they want to hear about is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, something extremely relevant to punk rock. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has announced its class for 2026, and frankly, a lot of surprising entries and upsets. A lot. Here's who got in: Joy Division, New Order as one band after being denied at least a couple of years, and also having the second to lowest fan vote. Billy Idol is in, Wu-Tang is in, Maiden is in, Sade is in, Oasis is in, also Phil Collins, Luther Vandross. Here's who did not make it, surprisingly: Mariah Carey, Lauryn Hill, Jeff Buckley, The Black Crowes, Shakira, Pink, and New Edition. I think our guesses were way off. I mean, like, right? Like, we were like way off. And like I said, I couldn't really argue with anybody on the original list. I'm very pleased to see Joy Division and Billy Idol in. I mean, they definitely should be in. I mean, really, pretty much everybody here should be in. I can't really argue with anybody that got in, frankly. And so I was surprised that they went for a pretty rock-centric list. Joy Division, rock. Billy Idol, rock. Iron Maiden, rock. Phil Collins, rock. Oasis, rock. Sade and Luther Vandross and Wu-Tang, not super rock actually, but still, I would say the list is a bit more traditional than I would have expected for the Rock Hall. You know, I definitely expected Mariah Carey to get in and Lauryn Hill for sure. And like I said, it doesn't bother me that they didn't get in, but I wonder if they didn't get in because they are both famously kind of difficult to work with. Sam, what do you think is going on here? Is this just who got? Oh, and also it shows the fan vote really is worthless. And I think the fan vote should be worthless because New Edition was ahead by like a factor of five, and they didn't even make the list, you know. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick. Rock Hall of Fame fan vote. And so the fan vote is a worthless point. It's really just a PR thing. Not that I care. And not that I really care about. So listen, yeah, New Edition, 1 million. Phil Collins, 900,000. Pink, 850,000. Shakira, 738,000. Luther Vandross, 732,000. INXS, 645. And Sade, 622. So of the fan vote tops, only one, two, three out of the one, two, three, four, five, six, seven got in. And as for the fan vote losers, there's one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine losers. Of the fan vote losers, one, two, three, four, five of the fan vote losers got in. So it just goes to show the fan vote doesn't really count for anything, not that I care about. I mean, Joy Division was only at 229,000, second to lowest. Oasis was third to lowest, which shocked me. Like there's way more fan vote for Black Crowes and Melissa Etheridge than Oasis, which shocked me, frankly. So, anyways, I don't know. I think the list is pretty good. I'm not offended by it. But as always, you know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame isn't an institution. It's a company owned by Jan Venner. And not that I'm opposed to that, but, you know, it's nothing that I get really that hung up over in 2026. Em, what's your take?
Yes. On the who's in?
On who's in, who didn't get in, do you care about the Rock?
I am pleasantly surprised with who's in. Like, finally, Joy Division and New Order are in. Same with like Billy Idol and Iron Maiden, who've been on like the list for a really long time. I don't like, and we've talked about this on the podcast a bit too, but like that Joy Division and New Order are one band inducted as one band. Again, it makes sense for the fan vote and for different things, but I think they should be inducted as separate bands. It is nice to see a like heavier rock sort of presence. I did think that Mariah Carey and Lauryn Hill were going to get in this time. But again, like it'll be probably next time. This one feels like here are people that and bands that we feel should be in, and they've been nominated for, you know, a couple years now, and now it's sort of time to get them in here. With the Rock Hall, I have been once and I enjoyed being there. when I was like, I think 14. It was a lot of fun. I would go back to see how it's changed and different things. Like I thought it was a cool collection of everything, and the building's really nice, and they had really good cookies and really good hot dogs. So that would be interesting to see. I do think it's funny that Oasis is in, and like I think they should be because you know they're everywhere. But I think it was Liam tweeted something that was like, "Oh yeah, I don't care about the Rock Hall, whatever." And then someone was like, "Haha, what if you get in though?" And he's like, "Well, if I get in, I'm gonna say it's the greatest thing ever." And then the tweet from today was like, "This is the greatest thing ever. Thank you so much for putting us in."
I'm
Which I
shocked he
think is
didn't
kind of
call it a
funny.
potato.
He's probably saving that for like the actual ceremony.
Yes, calling the Rock Hall a potato at the Rock Hall, you know.
Thank you for inviting me to your nice potato. Sam, what do you think of the nominees?
This, I think we overanalyzed it last time. To like a nauseating state, maybe. Yeah, no, this makes sense. This totally checks out. I think, you know, when we overanalyze it, we all, the three of us, clearly have favorites and clearly wanted specific people in because our favorites and our tastes, you know, help sway our picks, right? However, I was like, you know, yeah, the fact that, I guess the fan vote doesn't really matter. Like, yeah, this would make sense. I am really happy that New Order got in, even though, yes, they're tied to Joy Division together, because I also do believe they should be separate, but whatever. At least they got in because they've been trying. Well, it's not like they tried. It's just, you know, they've been on the ballot for a couple years now, and I think after you've been on the ballot a couple years, I don't think you get back on the ballot, I don't think. So, you guys could correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, I am happy that it's very like rock heavy, because I do find it a little absurd that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like, there's a lot of not rock people in it. It's kind of like in the name, rock and roll. But I guess taste is subjective. I don't know. Mariah Carey could be rock and roll if you count her as a punk, you know. But yeah, no, I do think that like this group does deserve it, does belong there. You know, even Wu-Tang, because Wu-Tang is like seminal Staten Island icons of like rap and stuff. Yes,
Wu-Tang is for the children, Sam.
yeah,
Wu-Tang is for the children.
I know they're for the children, but you know, it's nice to see the places that I used to live get repped in high places. Not that I ever rep Staten Island really, but here we are.
Do you rep Wu-Tang?
Well, I don't necessarily rep Wu-Tang, but I do know that they are really good people that have given back to the community on Staten Island, and I'm all for that.
Sam, who's your favorite Wu-Tang member, and which Wu-Tang member do you most closely associate with?
I don't have a favorite Wu-Tang member because I don't really follow them too much. However, I don't know if I like mentioned this on the podcast, but growing up, growing up, I used to take the bus in front of Method Man's house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
Cool.
he was the house with the giant satellite, and the only reason why I knew it was Method Man because I was literally standing at the bus stop waiting for the bus in South Beach, try to get home to wherever I lived, and a UPS FedEx guy went to drop off a package, and they had to, like, you know, it was a gated house, buzz in, got buzzed in, went to like the door. The person opened the door to, like, you know, sign for the package or whatever, and all like he came, the delivery driver came out and asked me, "Do you know whose house that is?" And I was like, "Huh?" And he was like, there's like gold records lining like the hallways of that house. And I'm like, oh, it must be someone from Wu-Tang. And then, of course, I looked it up like after the fact because, you know, this was around the time where the internet was not mobile for me yet. Yes, I'm dating myself. So there's that. And then Chris actually lived down the block from Redman. The house that was
Oh.
featured on MTV Cribs. If anyone remembers MTV Cribs, and that's really epic episode where you ha in order to ring the doorbell, you had to rub two wires to get Redman to come to the door. That was down the block from where Chris used to live. So
I think Redman still lives
Oh,
there.
wow.
I think so too. I will not disclose where that is because yes, I do remember like giant again, I'm dating myself, like Escalades in front of that house. Because you know, back in the day, Escalades were like the thing that you like, you know, rappers would drive, I guess, or like celebrities would drive. They're just amongst us as normal people, I guess. That's how I see them.
And who's your favorite member of Wu-Tang, and which do you most closely associate with?
I have heard a handful of Wu-Tang songs, and what I've heard, I have liked. But the only member that I really know a diff or like the only member that I know a little bit about would be Method Man.
How do you guys
So
not know
I'm going to say
Wu-Tang?
that.
How do you guys
I
not know that?
know.
You guys need to listen to Wu-Tang. Not that Wu-Tang is my all-time favorite, but they're not. But I definitely like some Wu-Tang for sure. My favorite,
What about
well,
you?
the best Wu-Tang record is
Yes.
ODB's first record. He's not the best member of Wu-Tang, but that is the best Wu-Tang record. The best member of Wu-Tang is Ghostface. He's got all the best records and, frankly, all the best mixtapes. The member of Wu-Tang I most closely associate with, it's got to be the RZA, in that he's calm, cool, collected, and he plots his moves before taking action. So definitely the Riz. Anyways, so Wu-Tang's for the children, people. Here's what else is for the children. Asian Man Records, they've announced their 30th anniversary shows. It's going to be September 2 to 5, 2026, at Bottom of the Hill, which will be among the very last shows at Bottom of the Hill in San Francisco. And Mike Park is taking an interesting stance on not announcing any acts whatsoever. So the first question is, Sam, what do you think of that strategy? And B, who do you think is going to be there? And who do you think is not going to be there?
So, Asia Man, they're like literally like seminal like or core punk, you know, like record label. So yes, I have probably a million Asia Man records in my house. I think he wants to make this party as a party for the record label and not necessarily just come see a band, you know. So I think that's kind of like what is happening there. I do find it interesting that he did not want this like in the the he wants people to like get tickets to this first and not, you know, put it on the internet like, you know, on Punk News and other news publications, but you know, you kind of put it on Instagram and stuff like that instead of like putting it like in a secret like chat or something to like, you know, people that like love Asian Man or something like that. I found that pretty interesting because there was an entire write-up on that on social media. I think that is kind of the ploy for that. I do think that there's going to be folks. Because if you look at his roster is pretty extensive of like people that Punk News cares about and just like people in general cares about. So like the whole like Chris Farren output, like you know, Alkaline Trio, Bruce Lee Band, jeez, like Joyce Manor Lawrence arms, like, you know, just Mike Parker himself is like an entire thing there. Yeah, so I think pretty much anybody that he has put stuff out might show up. Whoever's around. He's even put stuff out by Kevin Seconds, so, you know, Lemuria. All plausible humans that will, you know, show up in San Francisco and hang out for the night. You know, for or do a couple of schlongs. And I think it's going to be something special. I think it's going to be something like, you know, very creative, because Mike Park is a very creative human. It might be one of those, like, hey, we're just going to get a whole bunch of members of any of these bands, and they're just going to play songs. So you may never see this ever again, you know? Who knows? I don't know. I would love to go. However, I'm probably not going to go because it's literally me flying in September to San Francisco, and that's not possible for that time frame, especially since I'm probably coming back from Japan on the 2nd of September.
I would go if you posted what
Ooh.
bands are going to be there, but frankly, I'm not willing to take, a $2,000 risk without knowing what bands are going to be there. But here's my speculation as to who's going to be there. Lawrence Arms for sure. Joyce Manor for sure. Jeff Rosenstock and Chris Farren in some formation, maybe Bomb the Music Industry even,
Ooh.
Hard Girls possibly. Dog Party definitely. Smoking, well, actually, no, not smoking poops. I think Mike Park is not going to perform because he's talking about how he doesn't really like performing at all anymore. Let's see who else we got here. Chris
You know
Farren.
what? You know what would be really nice if he actually did the Chinkies.
I think they all live in the Bay Area.
Ooh,
It's a possibility.
exactly.
Teens in Trouble is going to be there. The more family bands are going to be there in some iteration. Andrew Jackson Jihad. And Lars Stevenson is going to be there. Probably Grumpster. Probably Pet Sematary because Mike Park loves that band. Probably Ojukubu Station because they're putting out a new record. That's Moira Weaver and Mike Park. And I'll say that's about who's going to be there and some of the lesser known Asian man bands as well. But that's who's going to be there. That's my guess. Possibly, well, I would say Kaytana, probably not Kaytana, but maybe like Augusta. Or one of those members, and maybe the Dwarves because Asian Man Records put out a Dwarves record. I don't think so though, but you never know. And M, what's your take? Who do you think is going to be there? What do you think of this strategy? I think I mean I think it's I think it's a cute strategy, but as for, I mean I'm not going to go because I don't know what. But you know what though? Actually, it's a good strategy. I'll tell you why. It's going to sell out no matter what. So Mike doesn't need people flying across the country for it. You know what I mean? So he can be vague, you know. But I don't know. Is that fair to the fans that if you don't know who's going to be there? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. One thing I do want to point out is people were like, why'd you post about this? Mike Parks said don't post about it. Yes, but then Mike Parks' PR person emailed us and said, please post about this. And I said, are you sure you want us to post about this? And they said, yes, FYI. So, Em, who's going to be there? What's your take on the strategy?
Yeah, I think, like, you know, you hit the nail on the head. Like, people are gonna go regardless, if it's on punk news or not on punk news. I do think it's an interesting strategy. I think because Asian Man Records has such a good roster of bands, and like bands that people like absolutely like just go like nuts for, you know, I think people feel pretty comfortable buying a ticket and making plans to go because it's like, well, it's one of the last shows at Bottom of the Hill. It's Asian Man Records. It's a 30th anniversary thing. It's multiple days. Like they're going to be doing like a lot of really special stuff. So I think in that sense, it's really smart to kind of like build more anticipation. I don't know if we're going to know who's going to play until either the day of or the day before, I think, or something like that. Like, I think the lineups are obviously like written in stone now, but I think they're not going to be made public until as last minute as possible. I do think, even though like he has talked about like not wanting to or not feeling comfortable, I guess, getting on stage and stuff, I do have a feeling that he is going to be on stage at one point or another, maybe not like fronting a band, but just kind of coming up and doing a song with someone or doing a song with a band or maybe doing like a Q&A thing because the Asian Man Records book is coming out at some point the later this year. I think like Jeff Rosenstock is a really good guess. I think Lawrence Irams would probably do it. Joyce Manor, like pretty much everyone that you guys have speculated, like I agree with. I don't think I have anyone you haven't mentioned that I can think of right now. But yeah, like just maybe glad you'll play. I think it's going to be fun, and I think it's going to be a real celebration and shows that are going to be very special. Yeah.
Well, there you have it. It's a mystery. So we shall see. Speaking of beloved people in the music industry, Afrika Bambaataa has passed away. Of course, Afrika Bambaataa, extremely influential in hip hop. He started organizing the earliest hip hop parties in the Bronx in 1973. And he's certainly one of the architects of hip hop, or he's without question one of the maybe the two or three or four main architects of hip hop. And he's the guy that sampled Kraftwerk on Planet Rock. And of course, that was kind of where the idea of using a drum machine against rapping was created, was that song Planet Rock. However, later on, he had some issues. And those issues were a number of men had said that African Bambaataa systematically molested them in the 70s and 80s. And he wasn't really able to refute those allegations. So, you know, it's relatively clear what went down. So, Sam, what do we do when we've got an incredibly important person in the genre that is incredibly problematic? What do you do with that one?
Oh.
I mean, because it's one thing when it's John Lydon where he's saying bullshit, but John Lydon has never actually done anything. He said bullshit, but he hasn't done anything, you know? And it's even a
Well,
thing with Michael Graves, who is total bullshit, but he hasn't actually, well, he was at the January 6th insurrection. But this African Mbata, you know, most likely molested a bunch of boys. So what do you do with that, Sam? What do you do with that?
so, okay, we're talking about his death, right? And I do think it is factual information to say that this person has died, right? It's all over Wikipedia. It's all over, like, other publications as well. I do think that, yes, upon talking about his legacy, you did a good job at crafting the framework of this person is important in hip hop and, in the Bronx, like, and stuff like that, but is extremely problematic. It's kind of like a weird place when, like, we are trying to bring up something that is factual, but the person is like really, really like problematic. And it's almost like, we sit here weighing, do we even mention this person, like, ever? I don't believe that these humans, problematic humans, that is, should be necessarily forgotten, so I do think that, John, this piece is written in a way that is very fair, if that's what you're asking me. I personally, like, I would not, like, I'm just like, this person is problematic. I
Well, I
respect
mean,
them for what they did, but is very problematic.
what I mean, it's the Bill Cosby question. It's like Bill Cosby, without question, incredibly important on comedy and incredibly important on 80s television, without question. Bill Cosby, the first guy to show a well-to-do black family or black family that isn't, you know, struggling with poverty, that kind of a thing. And of course, because he was raping women the entire time,
Yeah.
So, and it kind of seems like, and I'm not even against this necessarily, is with Bill Cosby, it seems like society's like, you know what? We're just not going to talk about Bill Cosby's contributions because there's no way to discuss his contributions without acknowledging that he was a monster or is a monster. So we're
Yeah.
just not going to talk about him at all. And I'm not sure how I feel about that. I mean, I'm not like that's definitely the wrong answer. But when we're talking about the history of music, if we're talking about the history of hip hop, we must mention Afrika Bambaataa. So then, do we just say, oh, also he was a rapist, or what do we do? Like Afrika Bambaataa, was a three fundamental architect of hip hop, had the idea of combining, electric drums with live vocals to create a party atmosphere. Also, he was raping young men the entire time, or boys the entire time. Meanwhile, on the other side of the Bronx, like, what do we do with that? Sam, what's the answer? I mean, M, no, M, what's the answer?
Well, there's also
Well,
the
yeah. See, the thing with Puffy, though, is Puffy, while perhaps important to hip hop, not nearly as important as Afrika Bambaataa. What Puffy did is he kind of ushered away from the G-Funk era and into the late 90s, early 2000s slick pop era. And perhaps from a business standpoint, what he did, which other hip hop guys had done before him, but Puffy really mastered it, is with Bad Boy Records, is he went to the record labels with an already finished record and say, I will license you this record. Do you want to license it? Because if you don't, the guy across the street will. And so he was important as a producer in that. He was important as a producer in making records sound very slick. And actually, I hate Puffy's production. He's also important in putting his vocal on every track on, yeah. It's like, Puffy, you don't need to do that. But he's not nearly as important as African. Afrika Bambaataa is to hip hop as to what Chuck Berry is to rock. Puff Daddy is to hip hop what, like, I don't know, Bono is to rock. Important, but it's not, he's not the only critical part, you know? M, solve this problem.
Yeah, so I think it should be mentioned along with their contributions because they have made or like they have contributed to music as a whole, culture as a whole, all this kind of stuff. So you can say like, oh, the Cosby Show was like super influential. However, Bill Cosby like was convicted of sexually assaulting and raping women. Like, you know what I mean? Like you kind of build it into the story because that's part of the story. You can't separate the art from the artist no matter how much you want to. So that's my kind of take with that. And with someone passing away, like we fall into the or like just as people, we want to remember people well. But the other thing is, if somebody was a shitty person when they were alive, that doesn't change when they're dead. Do you know what I mean? Like what they did during their life is still present and still holds, and the people still remember that along with everything else. So I think the two are hand in hand, kind of forever linked.
I agree with everything with what M. Moore says, 100%. So I'm gonna
Thanks.
put the screws on her because I enjoy putting the screws on M.
Okay,
Moore. So
go
M,
for it.
what if someone
Yes.
was a dick? What if someone wasn't a monster, but they were kind of a dick? You know what I mean? Like, trying to think,
Okay.
who's kind of a dick. Jay Reitard was a dick. Everyone says so. Anytime we discuss Jay Reitard, do we say, well, he wasn't a monster, but he was a dick? Or is it just if you cross? Is it that if you cross the horrendous line, then we mention that you're horrendous. But if you don't cross the horrendous line, then you get kind of a free pass when discussing your contributions overall. Is that the rule?
I think it's discussed if you're absolutely horrific, like if you're a rapist or like a serial sexual abuser or something like that. I think if like, oh, this guy was kind of a dick sometimes, like that's just sort of like a side note, if it's like, and I don't feel like that really needs to be mentioned unless it was like, again, sort of a horrific, abusive situation.
What if an
You know?
enthusiastic fan comes up to you when you're selling t-shirts for $10 and the fan gives you 20 and you try to pocket the 20 without giving change and the fan asks for the change and you reluctantly give him the change and the fan wears your shirt once and then washes it and then it falls apart in the wash? Should we mention that, Sam? I mean, Em.
No, that's not your fault.
Fair enough. It's not. Yes, it is. It's certainly the artist's
Oh,
fault, I would say.
sorry. I meant the yeah. I mean, not their fault about it falling apart, their fault about pocketing the money.
Well, anyway, I whatever that last conversation was, I agree with what M says. I think 100%. Here, let's talk about a cool person, Cat Moss of Scowl. She's got a kind of a one-off special performance, and we're going to, as we do anything with everything on the Punk News podcast, we're going to look perhaps too deeply into this. Cat Moss of Scowl. She's doing a one-off performance. It looks like it's organized by a Santa Cruz PR event, essentially, or the community. The community engagement entity of Santa Cruz. Of course, if you don't know Santa Cruz is near San Francisco. It is a great beach town. I've been there many, many times. I love Santa Cruz. Great record shop, Streetlight Santa Cruz. Also, a really good bookshop up the street with some records. Cool beach, good food, good times. Oh, great concert venues, of course, too. There used to be a thing called like the was the 412 Project or whatever. They had like hardcore shows there, but of course, there's also the I've got the name of it, where all the hippies used to play. Sam, where do all the hippies used to play in Santa Cruz? What's that place called? Not the Blue Lagoon.
I have
Catalyst
no
Club.
idea.
Catalyst Club. Also, Mo's Alley, famous reggae club. So Santa Cruz is very cool. Anyway, Cat Moss lived there, I think, or she did. So she's doing a special one-off performance, but it's not with Scal. It's with unnamed. Actually, she did name the musicians. I take that back. She's playing with, oh no, actually, she didn't name any musicians. We don't know who's backing her, but there's going to be some openers. She says she's going to do an interview and then kind of a performance of songs that you would not expect them to do. So I think this is fun, exciting, and you know, maybe not some huge deal, but if I was in the area, I would definitely go to this. And who's going to be in the backing band?
Ooh.
Who's going to be, what songs they're going to do? And does this signify anything into the earned internal status of Scal?
Local musicians. I think that a lot of the Scowl backing band, or not Scowl backing band, I think a lot of Scowl, the band, are going to be part of her backing band. I'm trying to think of other cool like Bay Area bands. I think bands there's going to be some bands from like Flat Spot Records that may members who might be serve as part of the backing band as well. And I'm trying to think of like who cool surprise guests would be. I think there'd be quite a few. But I think it's going to be a lot of like Flat Spot Records bands, which are cool. I enjoy Flat Spot Records bands. I don't think this says too much about the state of Scowl because like there's a lot of bands where the lead singer or like the drummer or whatever will go and do other things aside from the rest of the band. And that'll be, you know, just something that they'll do, and then they'll get back together, and everyone's in a good place. I kind of have a feeling that that's what Scowl is, or like where they are right now. And I also think with like just saying Cat Moss and then Scowl in brackets, it's obviously Cat Moss of Scowl, but I think it's going to be Cat Moss and one or two members of Scowl, and then rounded out by like Flat Spot Records bands. Yeah. I think that's what it's going to be. I like the poster. The poster is very cool. The little sheep and the little what is that? Snail. The snail holding the sign, I think, is my favorite part. Sam, what do you think?
Ooh, okay. So let's see. Drain is from Santa Cruz, and Drain
Oh,
is
true.
real fun. Actually, you know what? Just bring on the shark. I just want to see the shark backing Cat Moss. I think Tsunami's from that area. There's like buzz there. I'm not sure if they're active anymore or whatever that may be. I think you're probably 100% right. It's probably going to be a whole bunch of like flat spot people that's just so happens to be in the area. Definitely, Friends of Scowl is going to show up. I again would not be shocked if the shark from Drain shows up, or Drain itself shows up. Like things like that. I think this is going to be special, you guys. Like it's I have gone to interviews, like live interviews takes with people, and a lot of the times it's like real interesting to hear from artists, like what they have to say about things and what maybe they might announce something. I don't know. So maybe Kat has something up her sleeves, or who knows? And it's gonna come out that day. The other thing is, the three of us do interviews with people, and sometimes we do have to edit the things that we say, for print at least. So it's kind of like when you get people in front of an audience and you hear what they say, sometimes you get the truth, more of the truth. So it's, these are special moments. Also, it's very plausible that they're not going to do any scowl material, and they're just going to do covers of a whole bunch of stuff that they're into, which can be real fun. I hope some of that gets on the internet so that, people from really far away, because we don't live anywhere near Santa Cruz, can see one day. I don't know. Or just someone record it for us. Yeah, I really think it could be anyone. Literally anyone could be backing Cat at this point. It does look really fun.
John. I think it'll be fun. I think to what you can read into it is Scal's been on pretty much a nonstop tour for the last year or so. So I think they are a little sick of each other, and so they're kind of taking a little bit of a break. And that's not to say that they're going to break up or they hate each other. Just that, when bands go on that first really big tour after, they kind of have their first big album or maybe their second big album, they really get a real taste of each other and what it's like to be with all these people in very close quarters for an extended period of time. So I think they're all kind of, breathing out a little bit, kind of doing their own thing, and I think that's what this signifies. I think Scal certainly will release stuff in the future, but I think this is just them kind of doing their own thing for, 4 or 5 months. Anyway, it's cool. Cat Moss is awesome. Even though their PR person would not let us do an interview with them, but that's not the band's fault. That's not the band's fault. But I remember. I'm thinking of another band where we really want to do an interview, and they wouldn't give it to us, and well, the record didn't do that well, and I was sad about that. When they came creeping around, they're like, "Oh, do you want to interview this band?" And I didn't respond because if it's a one-way street, I'm not driving up that street. But speaking of a two-way street, the Bouncing Souls are going to be on many streets because they're going on tour and they're putting out a new record. Sam, are you excited? What's going on with the Bouncing Souls? Did you dig this tune?
I'm a champion of these guys forever and ever and ever. I do have, like, I follow them until God knows when. Who knows? But yeah, no, I'm excited that there is more music. Although I would have to say that I would like more songs, not 10 songs. But whatever. I did jump on this pre-order real quick. I need to feed the vinyl collection machine, because if not, there's something wrong with me. But yeah, no, I'm excited. I'm hopeful that this might be decent. I was kind of like the, so there's three songs out. There's Power United and The Light. The Light just came out, and it's I hear a production change, I think, in it. which I'm not sure how I feel about it yet. So ask me in a week when I listen to it more. But I wasn't necessarily a super fan of the other two songs either. So I'm hoping some of the other, seven tracks, there's going to be one that like literally hooks me in. Regardless, I'm going to have a copy of it in my collection until I die, anyways. So there's that. What I am super stoked about is this tour because this tour is insane. So they're going on tour with Suicide Machines, and they pretty much have like literally every friend, like Death by Stereo, Strike Anywhere, Flatliners, Argolites, like, oh, and more people. I'm not going to read than other people, but, like on legs of tours with them. I do see that there is no dates for the East Coast, at least Jersey and New York yet. I do hope that those dates do appear on said flyer after Stoked for the Summer happens, which is real soon for me. So we'll see. And I think it might be, I might be getting the Flatliners again. If that is what I'm reading into this a little too much, maybe. But what I think is really, really cool is the fact that they are celebrating three anniversaries on this run of shows. So Maniacal Laughter, How I Spent My Summer Vacation, and The Gold Record is having birthdays. And I love summer vacation, even though my that's what Chris played to nauseam, to kind of, I guess, brainwash me into loving the Bouncing Souls. And I also do love the Gold Record. There is several songs on the Gold Record that will make me cry in the pit, you guys. So I'm happy. I am stoked. I am happy. I hope. I have lots of hope for this. I don't know. Hopefully they don't let me down and make me cry. Although I would have to say that it would be very nice if Strike Anywhere came down to play shows in Brooklyn because I always am also a champion of the Strike Anywhere and always want to see them, but I guess I'm not going to Richmond to go do that. Boo. Yeah, I guys, can you tell I'm actually stoked?
Yes, I can feel the excitement.
Yes. Oh, it just oozes from my pores sometimes. Like you bring up the Bouncing Souls and I get a little smile. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Well, how do you feel? Like do you like the song? The song okay?
The song was all right. I don't know. It had a bit of a different sort of feel to it. I don't know how to like fully.
I feel like the beginning part did not sound like Greg. Like, Greg has a very specific like tone to him, and the beginning part didn't sound that way. But once you get to the end of the song, it's like, oh, that's Greg, you know? Maybe I'm just looking too much into that, or maybe I'm just a super fan that should probably tone it down a little bit. Also, the album art looks a little weird. Looks too similar to an AFI Burials album cover to me. But what do I know?
Oh.
Greg got the strangest accent. It's almost like a West Coast surfer accent, but he's from the East Coast. I can't place his accent.
Yes, Greg is very specific with his accent. But yes. maybe he worked really, really hard not to have like a Jersey accent.
Could be.
Ooh,
Anyways,
maybe.
Bouncing Souls, Sam's favorite band, doing their thing. Alice Cooper's got a memoir coming out. We'll just be brief about this. The memoir is called Devil on My Shoulder, and it's out October 6th. They didn't really talk about what it's going to be about, except it's going to be a biography. What's interesting is Alice Cooper already released a biography in the late 70s, and he had it recalled, and actually it sells for about $600. And I know this because I found one
Ooh.
for $1 and sold it for $600. And I read it, and it is pretty wild and far out. He says that it's all lies, and they just kind of, made a ridiculous thing just to make a thing, which could be true. But also, I mean, I've been beating up on Alice a little bit on the podcast, and I don't love doing it. But he's been editing his history, which is annoying to me. Like he always says, we were always about entertainment, and we were always really popular in high school, and everything came is easy for us, and I decided I wanted to play golf, and I'm a great golfer. All of a sudden, I didn't have to work that hard. Ha ha ha! Aren't I cute? I wanted to get off drugs, so I just stopped doing drugs. It was easy. Why is getting off drugs so difficult for everybody? It was easy for me, which I love Alice. Alice is the man. I'm a little annoyed by that, especially since the other Alice Cooper members say we were total outcasts in high school, which makes more sense to me. And you can't tell me albums like Billion Dollar Babies, albums like Killer are just entertainment. There certainly is political, or if not political, then social commentary in there. And so I think this, I'm going to get it and read it, but I think this autobiography is going to be a very, what's the word I mean, edited, of course, but that's not the, I mean, a very, what's what I'm looking for, curated autobiography, if that makes any sense, as Em and I talked about, I got that weird Alice Cooper record that's like was put out through like a religious mission, which was kind of weird, and so, I don't know, man. Like it's like Alice Cooper is one of the was and is one of the most dangerous guys in music. I get that he doesn't want to be a violent raging alcoholic anymore that gets naked on stage or does crazy shit. I just wish he would say, I was going through a lot in the 70s and doing a lot of drugs, and now I'm not doing drugs and I'm not that crazy anymore, but I still like performing. I wish he would do that instead of sanitizing his own history. You know what I mean? And I'm so shell-shocked about defamation these days, but if you read some of those old reports from like Alice Cooper parties in the 60s and 70s, they don't really mesh with what Alice Cooper says today, and I get that maybe he's embarrassed by that stuff, but I just wish he said it was a different time. I was crazy. I'm not proud of it. And now I'm now, I mean, Halford kind of, I mean, Halford's autobiography was a little annoying in and of itself too, but at least Halford was like, man, I was doing a lot of drugs. I was in a bad headspace. And then I realized I don't want to do drugs anymore. And I stopped doing drugs. And now my life is better because I don't do drugs. I wish Alice would do something like that rather than make it seem like everything was all roses and peaches and he never really faced any real hurdles. And maybe his autobiography will do just that. We'll see. But anyway, I'm going to get it. I'm psyched. I saw Alice again this summer. I've seen him 6 times. He was awesome this summer. Absolutely awesome. It was actually Judas Priest and Alice Cooper. And Judas Priest came out and did almost all of Painkiller. And it was one of the most, it was the best time I've seen Judas Priest probably. And I'm like, wow, I don't think Alice can follow that. And Alice equaled Judas Priest, which blew my mind. It was an amazing concert. It really was. Anyways, I like Alice. I interviewed him once. He was cool to me. And I bragged about this like 5 times. I did challenge him. No one ever challenges him. I did challenge him. And I did get him to kind of retreat from his stance a little bit. I'm very proud of that. Anyways, I'm psyched for this already. Let's see here. Oh, Social Distortion. They got a new song out and a new record coming out. The record's called Born to Kill. And what did you think of Partners in Crime, the hit single that all the kids are squealing over?
Oh, I haven't been able to go anywhere on the internet without people talking about Partners in Crime by Social Distortion. I didn't know they had a new song out at all
Yeah.
until I saw this and I read it. Oh my God. Of course I read the article, but like I listened to the song a little bit. I don't like Social Distortion, and this song just sort of clinched it for me. I don't like Social Distortion. I gave them a shot. They're not for me. They're not my cup of tea. But yeah. Sam, Social Distortion's new tune. Thoughts?
Okay. This song is a little slow for me. It almost seems like there's the same progression happening in the entire song. They s released another song before this one, Born to Kill, which was a little bit more, I guess, crunchy. Like, there was louder guitars. And I like that one a little bit better. So I'm probably not going to be buying this record anyways, because I'm not a huge Social D fan. I do understand the, Social D is pretty important in the punk sphere, as there's so many people that's into Social D. I actually have tickets to go see Social D and Descendants. Yeah, I think that's the tour. Yeah. Like later this year, but yeah, no, this one didn't wow me. Nope.
Sam, on a scale of 1 to 10, what does John G give this?
I think John G gave this like a 4.
Em, what do you think?
I think he gave it a 2, and that's being generous.
I give it a 3. I mean, I would not give
Oh.
it. I mean, one is like what I would, what we would call like despicable music of no redeeming value, like Screwdriver or something. Two would be like Sam, you remember that band Attila? You remember that band?
Oh,
That's
God.
a 2, you know. This is a 3. Is, you know, I've seen Social D live, I've heard their records. I just do not get why this band like Social D headline Punk Rock Bowling. I'm like, how is this band headlining Punk Rock Bowling over Flag? Like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I just don't know what people hear in this band. It's boring radio rock. It's so boring. It's so bad. Like, I wish someone could tell me what you could, like, I can tell you what I get out of Flag. What I get out of Flag is the angst, the rage, and the fury, and plus just the sonic smashing makes me very excited. From Guar, it's loud, it's fast, it's exciting. I enjoy the humor, I enjoy the social commentary. Peter Tosh, it's got a great low end bass. It's got great drums. Peter Tosh's voice is very powerful. It's soul moving. Same with Lee Scratch Perry. That's what do people get out of this? What do they get?
Well, John, your taste is not what other people likes, and
Well, I know,
some
but what it.
people like rock music, right?
Yeah,
But
but how
they
about this? Whoosh.
whoosh of air.
But
That is a whoosh.
what do they get out of it? Like, what is exciting about this?
I think you're asking the wrong people because I'm not particularly a Social D fan, neither is M. I think we should get a Social D super fan and like get them on the podcast. So if someone wants to come onto the podcast and talk about Social D and explain to us why they love Social D so much, please
Yeah.
let us know and maybe we'll have you come on to talk to the three of us about it. You know, maybe you'll change our minds or not.
Well,
Who knows?
I'm not going to have them on, but they can email podcast@punknews.org.
And maybe we'll read it. I don't
Unless
know.
Social D themselves want to come on, and I'll just be like, listen, man, like, why is your music so bad? But could it be that it's all Emperor's New Clothes? Could it be that no one actually likes Social D? And just everyone says to everyone they like Social D because they feel like they have to say that.
Oh no, I really do think that there is a subset of people out there that really, really love Social D. Like, they have made the look of Social D like their entire life. Like, I went to college with some of these people. Like,
That's true.
you know, so like, I do know that there is Social D is a big band in the grand scheme of if you were to tier and rank bands. I just know that the three of us is not necessarily the hugest Social D's fans or fans at all. You know, I do know that it's been a little bit since they did put out a new record, and this is a big deal to some people, you know. Also good to see Epitaph still putting stuff out because I haven't seen a lot of things out of Epitaph in a little bit.
Well, we just have one story left, but I'm just gonna tell another quick story. I meant to kind of tell at the top of the hour. I was at an event this past weekend, and who was there signing books? Monty Melnick of On the Road with the Ramones. What everyone says is probably the best book about the Ramones and the most truthful book about the Ramones. Dee Dee's book famously is exciting but filled with lies. Joey never wrote a book. Johnny never wrote a book, and some of the other books are perhaps suspect. And there's Mickey Lee's book too, which people have opinions on. I'm just protecting myself that way. People have opinions on Mickey Lee's book. So, anyways, I go up to Monty. I'm like, Monty, I'm so happy you're here. I've been trying to get your book online, but it's difficult to get it. And now here you are, and I'm here to get it. What do you think Monty Melnick said to me?
Here's a copy.
He said, "You can get it online on Amazon." And that bummed me out. That bummed me out because A, I'm right here, Monty. Monty, you get more money from me giving you money than me giving money to Amazon. B, even if you're right, which you are kind of right, but I think the specific edition I got is harder to get online. I mean, I've looked a few times and it's been pretty expensive online. Maybe it's one of these things that fluctuates. But he, you know, I guess everybody's entitled to a bad day. But he really killed my buzz, man. Like, he should have been like, thanks for coming out, man. I appreciate you getting my book. Can I have it for $50? You want me to sign it? You know? And then be like, here you go. Here's the book. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Or just, thanks for coming out, man. Good to see you. Like, he seemed mad that I said I couldn't get his book online, but I'm happy to buy it from him in person. I'm very excited about it, which, you know, I mean, I'm just judging him off one interaction. But you know, it did kind of bum me out a little bit, man. Like, I thought he was gonna be like, "Hey, thanks." Like, all I wanted was to say, "Hey, thanks, man." That's all I wanted, you know. Unlike Legs McNeil, who when I met him was cool and acted like he was interested in my book, even though I think he wasn't. But I appreciate the lie. Anyways, I'm about a quarter of the way through On the Road with Ramones, and what do you think I give it out of 10?
Out of 10, I think you're going to give it a 7.
Sam, what do you think?
6.
9 out of 10. Fantastic book.
Oh,
Fantastic.
wow. Oh,
Really is a
good.
like everyone should read On the Ramones, On the Road with the Ramones by Monty Melnick. It's an oral history. It's an oral history, which is always the best way to do a music history book. And it's diff, you know, it's all the Ramones and all the side players talking about being on the road with the Ramones and how they started. And it does a really good job of explaining the genesis of the Ramones, which I didn't even really know that there was really like two or three bands from before the Ramones that kind of merged into the Ramones. Of course, there's Sniper with Joey Ramone, but Monty was in a band and Johnny was in a couple of bands. And also, I gotta say, what's interesting is I'm usually a Johnny defender. I might have to take a step and a half back from that because Johnny does not come off great in this book, you know. But then again, he's not here to defend himself, and maybe people have vested interests. Even so, everyone should read On the Ramone with the Ramones. A lot of great pictures, even better text. Great book. You know, I spent $50 for it, which, you know, all right, man. That's the thing that, like with Legs McNeil, I spent like 50 or $60 on the book, even though I already had it. But I felt like I owed it to him because he created the oral history and it was the exact blueprint that I used for my book. So I felt it was necessary to pay tribute. But that's the thing that was artists were like charging 50 or $60 for their book with the autograph, which I don't know how I feel about that. On one hand, they need to get paid, they need to make money. But on the other hand, it used to be if you buy the book, you get the autograph for free, you know. But now they don't even offer just buying the book without the autograph. Now it's like you have to buy the book with the autograph or you don't get it, you know. So I don't, Em, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about artists selling their book for 50 or $60 autographed? What do you think? I guess I should say I'm thrilled by it because I've put out a book or two, you know. But Em, how do you feel about that?
50 or $60 for an auto. How many people are autographing the book?
Well, just the author, Monty Melnick.
Oh, just the author.
Hey ho, John,
I.
rock on, Monty.
Ooh, nice. Did you like the horns?
No.
Oh.
I kind of wish he were hey ho, let's go, Monty. But you know, whatever. I'm not complaining. The book's great.
I think $50 is fair for the author. I think if you're gonna, like, if it's a book where the band has contributed and has writing credit, like the NoFX book, because with that you'd be getting 5 signatures, including the author. I think that would be like 70, 60 or
Really?
70, because there's so many, there's more people involved. So that's what I would say.
Sam, what do you think?
Okay, so I personally don't think that signatures should. Okay, so if you go to an event, right, and they're there to do a signing, I don't think that there should be an upcharge in that because you were there for the event, right? However, I think if you were not there for an event and you wanted a book signed, it can be upcharged a little bit, but definitely not $50 to $60. I think if it was like, let's say if the book was $30 and it was upcharged $5, I think that is fair, right? And it also depends on who's signing it, because, like, you know, if it's like the author, and it's a very famous author, then okay, fine, I get that. But if it's the first book of this person, and this person's unknown, but it's like, okay, so let's say it's the NoFX book or something like that, right? If you get Fat Mike and all of NoFX to sign it, cool, because that's usually what who you want. You're usually fans of said band, and whatever. You may not be fan of the author that writes this book unless you're John G and you follow John G around, right? Although I would have to say, John G, if I wanted you to sign something, I would probably ask you to do it for free. I'm not giving you $5 for
What if I was like,
that.
Sam, give me $5 for my autograph?
Yeah, but but that's usually sold as an upcharge in when you buy the book. So because I go to Rough Trade in New York City, does a lot of in performance things, and signings. So I might go and buy so I might buy the record. The record might be $25 for Rough Trade, right? They might sell it to me for $30. I still have to go to said place, right? Wait in line to get things signed and stuff like that. So I think that would be fair. But usually when I go to Rough Trade, I do get a performance out of it, so I'm getting more than what I paid for in said record. I generally don't I don't let really care about signatures on things so much. I know some people are collectors of signatures. Like they'll go and they'll get every record cover signed or whatever. I did see once at a show, this poor dude's record. He went to a show with a record and got the band to sign it while they're playing on stage, and the entire record cover was mangled by the end of the night. And I was like, why did you even do that, dude? I was like, just wait. Yeah. Wait, John, do you like signed records?
No, actually, I'm sort of against the idea of autographs in that that automatically puts you below the other person. And in both my day job and my music night job, that's not a good thing to do, you know? There have been, like, I remember one of my clients put out a book, and I came to one of the events and I bought the book, and I specifically didn't ask for him to sign it because I thought it might be undignified. And then afterwards, I realized that he was kind of dying for me to ask for him to sign the book because that made him feel good. You know what I mean? So I'm like, oh, I should have asked for him to do it. You know what I mean? But no, I honestly, I'm against paying for signatures as a rule. You know what I mean? Everyone's just a person. You're not a deity, you know. But if people dig them, that's fine. I don't, you know. But with regards to the Monty Melnick book, I gotta say, man, $50 for a book just because it's signed. The book is awesome. Everyone should get it. I feel a little squeezed, you know. And from my perspective, as someone that has put out products and represents clients that put out products, the last thing that you want is for someone to walk away feeling squeezed. You want them to walk away feeling happy that they bought something cool from you, you know. And so, but maybe, but other culture definitely is changing. The signature industry that is like people go to like these chiller cons or whatever, where like you pay to get in, and then all you do is you walk around and pay for people's signatures. That's bigger now than it's ever been, much. Which is kind of surprising to me. I thought that was like an 80s thing kind of thing, but it's huge now. So I might be out of step as usual, but you know, the book is fantastic, and I'm glad that I bought it. But you know, whenever I read it, I'm like, yeah, I paid $50 for this book. You know what I mean? Like, you know, at 35, I'd be happy. 50, yeah, you know, I don't. But you know, but people have to get paid. So I have mixed feelings. Sam, you mentioned one other thing. Oh, the one other thing I did want to mention. I saw the Circle Jerks 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. Amazing. They did a mini Black Flag set. It was awesome. They were selling, actually, this goes right back to our conversation. They were selling signed copies of Wild in the Street. Guess how much they wanted for a signed copy signed by Keith and Hedson?
$35.
$50.
$30. Extremely, I mean, that's what the record costs, $30. You know, like, wow.
Wow.
I'm like, that's
That's
cool.
good.
But I'm going to be a total dick here, except They didn't have them in plastic sleeves. So the entire show, you got to worry about smudging the autograph. And it's like, I almost want, like, it's the TLA, which is a Live Nation venue, so it sucks. There's no in and outs. If there was in and outs, I would have went out, walked to the record store, bought 100 pack of sleeves, and came back and gave it to them. You know what I mean? And this goes back to it. It's like, I'm definitely cool paying $30 for a record, especially signed. That's cool. I just wish that they took for whatever. When you get to a certain level, some bands, like, they treat merch like it's garbage, in that, like, people pay for no matter what, so we'll just, do whatever we want, and we need to make it special. Like, when I went and saw Morrissey, he was selling his signed record for like $500. It's like, treating people like trash is no way to keep your fans happy. So I'm not dissing the circle jerks. It's cool to sell the record for $30. I just wish they had taken the extra step and put a plastic sleeve on. Sleeves are 10 cents each. Like, that's easy to do. Why not make life easy for the fans and make them excited to buy things? Just my commentary on merch. Anyway, Circle Jerks were great. Everyone should go see them. Their latest tour was awesome, if it's still going on. Last story of the day. Oh, Dwarves got a new record. Speaking of awesome merch, the Dwarves have a new record coming out. Jankum. It's billed as a return to their hardcore roots, a la the Blood Guts album. I'm very psyched on this record. Surely I haven't heard it yet, but if I had, I'd probably say it's one of their best records. But I haven't heard it yet. But also, there are a number. Let's see if they're actually up right now. There are a number of special merch options coming out for this record, which have not been posted yet. But it'll probably be posted by tomorrow, so I'm just going to talk about it. There is a Black Flag Damage parody version. There's a Minor Threat parody version, and there's a Bad Brains parody version created by moi, John G.
Hey.
And so the Black Flag parody, I'm very proud of. It's got Bobby Faust, the little person that is sadly passed away, but it's kind of one of the dwarves' representatives smashing his own image. The Minor Threat version has Bobby Faust, in the pose of Alec McKay, and that comes with a straight edge Coke mirror, which is kind of fun, and a pin and a sticker. And then the Bad Brains version comes with a bag of Jankum and the straight edge Coke mirror and the stickers and the bun. So I'm very excited about the new Dwarves record. Sam and them, I think, are not huge Dwarves fans, but maybe this record will make them fans. Otherwise, go out and get it now. It's going to be rad. And actually, on the Dwarves website right now, there's a bunch of rare stuff. Some stuff that I don't even have that I'm going to buy right after this podcast is over. And so, yeah, so that's what's happening in the punk rock world. Sam and them, any other final comments,
Well,
bro?
I know where you're gonna be all
Ooh.
fall.
Indeed.
Excited to see him.
So, okay. Anything else you guys want to mention, or should we wrap this puppy on up? It's
I
kind of
think
a
the
weird
puppy needs
phrase.
to go to bed.
All right, this puppy needs to go. All right, the puppy. M, what should the puppy do?
Yes.
What's going to happen with the puppy next week?
The puppy next week is going to be on the podcast where we're going to talk about lots of cool shit, hopefully,
And
and
we'll see
puppies.
you, and we'll see them all next week.